because we'll fall asleep or pass out or dehydrate. So I've called it on the fly. I'm not doing it. We'll do it again. It's also not very good in English. It's quite complicated, and I just don't think this is the weather for me to try and explain all that. So let's just do 1 to 8 and come and have communion. So let's just change everything on the fly. So chapter 4 comes after chapters 1 to 3. We can handle that in this heat. And in 1 to 3, Paul has been saying, God is actually really angry about how messed up humans are. But actually, because he's angry, it means that he's going to save people as well, because that's what he's like. He's both angry and he loves to save. So he's offered you Jesus. So welcome to church this morning. And then he anticipates church, when they tell people about Jesus, people ask questions. So you go and tell your friends about the Christian message, they're going to ask you questions. That's why this Romans book was written, is to help you on mission. And one of the questions people ask when you explain the gospel of Jesus, well, there's loads, but one that keeps coming up, maybe you're asking it yourself, maybe your friends have asked it. In fact, they used to ask it a lot more when society feared God more than it does now. People ask this one a bit less, and it's in Paul's mind behind chapter 4, and it's this question. Right, how do I get right with God? Do I have to do something for him to love me or like me or guide me or come alongside me? What do I have to do? I'm not sure people care even enough. They're not bothered. I don't think as much as they used to be. And it's just that this is my question now before communion. Do I have to do something to join and have everlasting life? And Paul's like, all right, let me tell you about a man called Abraham, because he really answers that question. Because when you look at Abraham, you learn this really important message about this ancient Israelite faith that we now have as well in Park End, and it's this. You don't have to clean yourself up to become a Christian. In fact, if you've read chapters 1 to 3, you know you can't clean yourself up. You cannot behave yourself well enough for God to think you're wonderful enough to get the red carpet out for you and welcome you in heaven and say, you've earned this. Your friends haven't, but you have. In you come. In fact, sit on the throne. You're that good. You're as good as Jesus. You can't do it. As a pastor, people say to me a lot, I'm a good person, Owen. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. Because that's not what this faith is about. I don't give a monkey's if you're good, because you're not good enough. Really, nobody is for heaven and to have God's blessings. We love like earning things as humans. And Abraham's gospel is like, you can't earn this one to come and have communion. You have to simply look to Jesus and trust him and what he does for people like us who aren't good enough. Just look. And Abraham did that. Abraham, he's always talking to this Lord in Genesis, this Lord who's on the ground. He's called the Son of God, or he's called the Word of the Lord, or he's called the Angel of the Lord. And Abraham trusts this Lord. And that's how Abraham is in heaven. The God on the ground saved him. And right, so before we come to communion, let's just, I'll say a few things about 1 to 8. So this is the point. He just repeats this now. What then shall we say about Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh, what he discovered in this matter? According to the flesh, that means Abraham is really important to us. What Abraham knew about God matters to you in Rome or in Park End. He matters to Jewish people. He matters to Christian people. He's the big one. Right, how did he get right with God? It really Matt, do I have to do something special like our physical ancestor did? If, in fact, Abraham was justified by works, that means if he was impressive and he got to heaven by the good works that he did, he had something to boast about, but not before God. That means if anybody could boast about how good they are for heaven, it's Abraham. He's the big man. I mean, he wouldn't boast before God, but he could boast before you. That's what that means. He's better than you. He trusted God like the Lord told Abraham to sacrifice his son. And Abraham was like, I'll do that for you. You wouldn't, and I wouldn't. But he would, he didn't. He didn't have to. But he's up there with the greats. He could boast, not before God, obviously, but before you, before me, he could. And so how did he get right with God then, this super Christian, messianic Israelite? What does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. He trusted God's promises to him on how to get right with God and be blessed by God. And that's drawing from Genesis chapter 15. He's quoting it there. And in Genesis chapter 15, the word of the Lord walks up to Abraham. It literally says he walks up to Abraham and he says, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to bless the whole world through your children. In fact, we're going to save everyone through you. Believe me. And here comes 4 and 5, and we'll be done at 8. Now, one of the commentaries I read gave a helpful illustration. I think it was a book by book. If someone works for you, you give them a wage, right? At least you should. When you give them a wage, they don't have to say to you, thank you very much. They don't have to, because they've done the work. Do you understand? If someone doesn't work for you and you walk up to them and you just give them a gift and say, here's some wages for you or some gifts for you, they're going to say, wow, thank you very much. So if they work for you, they don't have to say thank you very much because they've done the work. And this is what's in Paul's mind for chapter 4. Did Abraham work to get right with God and be righteous? Or was it a gift? This is the mentality that you have to figure out as you come to communion. Has God given you a job description that you have fulfilled perfectly, and that's why you can come and have communion and know that you're a Christian? Or, like with Abraham, is it a gift? That's what Paul is thinking all the way through chapter 4. And loads of people in Rome, in Abraham's day and now, think of God as an employer who you have to do things before you dare think that you're a Christian. We do that, and it is a killer. And if you're doing that, communion's not for you, because to you, God is an employer. That will kill you. God will guide me in my life because... finish the sentence. Why will he guide you? God loves me because... God's going to answer my prayer because... Like, what comes next for you? That's what Paul's getting at. What came next with Abraham? What would have Abraham said? Because Paul, in chapters 1 and 3, he's been showing you, if this law, if these rules are a job description, nobody's fulfilled it. So how are you going to get any answers from God? How is he going to guide you? It's like my Welsh GCSE. It's just non-existent. I can't say to the WJEC, can you count me as a Welsh speaker, please? They're going to go, you what, mate? I saw you didn't even show up. Like, you didn't just fail. You weren't even there. And that's chapters 1 to 3 with God. Like, you can't do this. Only Jesus has done that. We haven't. Even when we're at our best, we have fallen way short. It's a killer. And you've got to get rid of that in your head to be a happy Christian. God, I've got status in the world, so can you do me favors, please? Other people look up to me. Can you? I got a car. I've worked hard for that, so can you bless me now in my prayer life? I got a job. I've lost weight. Are you now impressed with me? Can I now come? Can you heal me from the thing that I'm worried about? Because I've been going to the prayer meeting for 40 years in Park End. And we do that. We do it with food. I'm going to eat carrots Monday to Friday, massive pudding binge on the weekend, because I've earned it. That we're very transactional, and it's a disaster. Is that how God operates with you as you come to the communion meal? this morning. Is that how God operates fundamentally on how he blesses humans for people who want to get right with him? The answer is no. It doesn't get far with the living God. In fact, the only thing you're going to bring to the communion table is a mess. Just let it splurge out onto Jesus. Because here's his point now. To the one who works, wages are not credited as a gift, but as an obligation. However, to the one who does not work, but trusts God, who justifies the ungodly, their faith is credited as righteousness. Credited means their trust is viewed as being right with God. You got it. This is what Abraham was about. And that's the story of Abraham. And I was going to unpack it and show you loads more. But I'm not going to. I'm just going to repeat this again. To get right with God, you don't have to pray 5 times a day. If you're right with God, you might want to pray 1,000,000 times a day. You don't have to get right with God. That's the wrong religion. You don't have to stop swearing for a month for him to come alongside you. Your swear jar doesn't have to be empty, and then he's going to bless you richly to get right with him. It's the same with David. And let's just end by 6, 7, and 8. David said the same thing. It's the same thing. Old Testament, New Testament. When he speaks of the blessedness of the one to whom God credits righteousness apart from works, those who he blesses. And here's Psalm 32. Blessed are those who are goody two-shoes, Bible-loving, sinless churchgoers. Blessed are those whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord will never count against them. And I can't tell you how wonderful that news is. And I tell you what we'll do now to close. And we'll get into that a whole lot more another time. Let's read Psalm 32, which is what he's quoting. Somebody finds Psalm 32 and, I got it. And it's in the red Bibles in front of you if you want to follow along. We'll do this on the fly. Number 560. Because you think, David, he's quite a famous believer. If anybody's earned it, not Abraham, David. Nope. I'm going to read Psalm 32. Then we'll get the children back in. But I want you to realize this. The psalm does not say that the blessed person is the person who has no sin. It says the righteous, blessed, happy person is the sinful person whose sins are covered and forgiven. And you will leave this building happy if you realize that God can handle your mess. And you can just hand it all over to him. Everything that you've thought and done in your life, you give it to God, and you will be happy knowing, what, he's handling that for me? Yes, because of Jesus. Dump everything onto him. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and in whose spirit is no deceit. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. And you forgave the guilt of my sin. That is Romans chapter 4. Therefore, let all the faithful pray to you while you may be found. Surely the rising of the mighty waters will not reach them. You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. I will instruct you and teach you in the ways you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye on you. Do not be like the horse or the mule, which have no understanding, but must be controlled by bit and bridle, or they will not come to you. Many are the woes of the wicked, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the one who trusts in him. Rejoice in the Lord and be glad, you righteous. Sing, all you who are upright in heart. Welcome to the message of Abraham and David. Let's come to communion.